The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. On today's show, I'm going to talk about something that I promised I'd talk about a while back. It's a Social Security-related topic. It's specifically, WINDEX, which is an acronym, refers to the widow's indexed primary insurance amount. I'll get more into that, explain what that is a little bit later. That topic came up a couple of months ago when I was answering a question on the Q&A show. The topic kind of led to the WINDEX idea, and I realized it was something that we hadn't really talked about on the show in any great detail. And it's something a lot of people need to know about. So that and a related topic, actually, the WINDEX adjustment, if you will, is a culprit in underpayment of widow's benefits. And another culprit is incorrect or bad advice in filing for widow's or widower's benefits. So I'll talk about both of those today. Jim's not on the show today. Jim is actually recovering from a medical issue he had last week before Thanksgiving, and he'll be back on the show shortly. He'll, I'm sure, fill you in with all the details, but out of respect for his privacy, I'm not going to give you all the details of his medical condition, but just know he's doing fine. He's going to recover. He's just recuperating at this time, so that's why Jim isn't on the show. But let's get into WINDEX. Where this comes from, where this issue arises, is due to the way survivor benefits are calculated for a widow or widower. And just so I don't have to keep saying widow, widower, I'm going to probably call it widow for the rest of this show. But every time I say widow, it applies to a widower as well. So these widow's benefits are going to be determined by what the deceased person, what Social Security refers to as the number holder, the deceased person's benefits would have been if they were still alive. And where the issue arises, let's back up a little bit and just refresh everybody on how your retirement benefit is actually determined. Your retirement benefit for Social Security is determined by your earnings record, so all of the wages that were reported to Social Security over your working life. And those wages are adjusted for inflation. They call them indexed earnings, AMI, average indexed monthly earnings, is where they average your earnings over your best 35 years. But the indexing part is important. They don't just take all of maybe a 30, 40 year history of earnings and treat them all the same. They realize that earnings you had when you were 20 are going to be at a different scale, right? A different buying power or purchasing power due to inflation than earnings you report at 55 or 60. So they adjust all this for wage inflation specifically, not CPI. That adjusts your benefit due to a different kind of inflation or price inflation. Wage inflation is the inflation of wages in the economy. And wages actually increase in a healthy economy at a faster rate than prices. That's why people's standard of living tends to go up over time in a thriving economy. But those inflation adjustments are applied to all of your earnings in order to calculate your AIME, which then leads to your PIA, your primary insurance amount. And that's what is the benefit you would receive at your full retirement age for a retirement benefit. And the year they determine this, this official PIA, is the year that you turn 62. And all of your wages up until your age 60 are adjusted for wage inflation. You might think, well, why to 60? It's just a practical matter. They don't have information about wage inflation in time to make the adjustment real time, so it lags a little bit. So they decided, let's just draw a line in the sand and cut these adjustments off at age 60. So all of your earnings up through age 60 are adjusted for inflation. Any earnings you have after age 60 are not adjusted, but could be included in your earnings record. And that's kind of the underpinnings or foundation of the calculation of your Social Security retirement benefit. So with that kind of refresher, imagine someone passing away at 50. So we have a married couple, and since I decided I'm going to use the widow term for the survivor, the husband passes away at 50. Well, the widow has the ability to claim a survivor benefit starting as young as her age 60, unless she's disabled and could be then at age 50. But assuming it's age 60, that would be the earliest. The full survivor benefit isn't owed at that point. You'd have to reach your full retirement age before that would be the case. But essentially, the widow can step into the shoes of the deceased and collect that benefit. But remember, in my hypothetical, they passed away at 50. So their earnings record is incomplete. Their earnings record, they don't have earnings all the way through age 62. They have earnings through 50, probably. And not only that, if they just look at the benefit that was payable at their age 50 and make that the survivor benefit, all of the wage inflation that would have been applied between them being 50 and being 60 are not applied to that record. Thus, you can see where this is leading. This is leading to a widow's benefit that is smaller than it otherwise would have been simply because they died before reaching age 62. So in the original version of Social Security survivor benefits, this was just how it worked. If your spouse died at an early age, the survivor benefit was just permanently reduced, and it just the way it was. But they changed that, and I think this went back to... boy, I think it was in the 80s, they applied a change to Social Security and said, you know what, let's have an alternative way of calculating a widow's PIA for benefit purposes, survivor benefit purposes, when the deceased passes away before they turn 62. And they call it the widow's index, and they've mashed that together, and they call it the Windex. Okay, and they actually created a new word in the operations manual at Social Security. They actually used it as a verb, windexing. Okay, they actually refer to it as windexing. They don't give any credit to Windex, the glass cleaner, but they just stole that, apparently. And so they have to look at the application of this, and the net effect is... if the survivor can get a bigger benefit, if they apply the wage inflation for the missing years, in my example, from age 50 to 60, if they apply that wage inflation, if it increases the PIA, the widow deserves the higher benefit. Essentially, giving the widow benefit for the wage inflation adjustments doesn't include extra earnings, so those missed years of earnings are still zeros, but the earnings that are in the record that established the deceased person's retirement benefit, are those earnings are indexed for more years. And It makes a difference. It makes such a difference that a few years ago, 2016, the Office of the Inspector General, that's kind of the somewhat independent overseer of Social Security that checks on these things, makes sure everything's working properly and addresses issues and makes recommendations to Social Security to fix things. They did a report and they found that there were about a little over 25,000 widow and widowers that had been underpaid $224 million combined because they didn't get credit for this alternative calculation. They were just stuck with the permanently lower survivor benefit because their deceased spouse happened to die before turning 62 and before reaping the benefits of all of the wage inflation that would normally have been applied to their earnings record over the years. So they made some recommendations. The reason this comes up, the Social Security system actually knows that this is supposed to happen. The system, they use an automated system called the MCS, the Modernized Claims System. I don't think it's particularly modern anymore, but that's what it's called. And whenever these applications are processed, if they're straightforward, the MCS looks at the Windex, and if it applies, it applies it, and everything is fine. But many times there'll be something unique about a claiming of benefits that an individual human at Social Security needs to do some calculations or adjustments manually. And they found when some of these manual adjustments were being made, the Windex did not get applied properly. To the tune of 25,000 people out there that had been underpaid millions and millions of dollars as a group. And it's a random sample that they had. In that random sample, they found 25,000. They identified 178,000 total that did not have the Windex PIA applied to their account that probably should have. So they did some investigation. I think Social Security has come around to fixing most of these. But as of 2016, this was a major issue. A lot of people were not receiving the benefit that they were supposed to. So I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of the calculation per se. If you go to the operations manual of Social Security and look for Windex, all caps, W-I-N-D-E-X, usually call it a Windex PIA, you'll find it in there. And let me give you some examples of how it would apply. Okay, my description might be a little bit hard to follow. So let's pretend that the worker is the person who passed away in these examples. The worker died in 2003. The widow reaches 60, so the youngest age where they can claim a survivor benefit, reaches age 60 in 2018. The worker would have been 62 in 2019. So they died 16 years before they turned 62. Before Windexing, so without Windexing, they would have used the 2003 benefit calculation. And, obviously not giving credit for some 15 years worth. Now, what they're going to do instead with Windex, they're going to pay the widow based on a 2018 eligibility year, which means they're going to apply 15 years worth of wage inflation to this particular benefit before they pay the widow. So in that particular scenario, the Windexing should apply and would certainly benefit the widow in this case. Next example, let's say the worker dies in 2018. The widow turned 60 also in 2018. The worker would have attained 62 in 2034. Okay. In this case, there is no, the Windexing doesn't matter, because the fact that the person was passed away in 2018 and the widow who's claiming the benefit is eligible to claim the survivor benefit also in 2018, there's no adjustments that need to be made. They're not going to grow it for those extra 16 years that would take. In this particular case, the worker did pass away before turning 62 by a significant ways, but because the widow was much, much older and had reached eligibility year, there was no application. So you can see the rules are a little tricky here on how to apply it. The point is, it should be checked. Whenever you have, keep this in mind, if you are claiming a survivor benefit on a spouse that passed before age 62, I highly recommend that you ask point blank of the Social Security Administration, is Windex being applied to my benefit? There's actually what we call a flag in the system. If Windex is in force, and I don't know if it's a checkbox or a little highlight or something, but it's actually something they can look at. Someone who's looking in your record in the Social Security computer system can easily see, oh yes, the Windex is applicable here. If it's not, ask them if it should be. Now, like I mentioned before, if your application, if everything processed through the automated system with no humans really involved in it, it probably got applied if it was due. It's if there was something unique about your claiming strategy or unique about your particular record, that there was some manual intervention or adjustments being made, that seems to be where the Windex does not get applied all the time in a consistent manner. So I know kind of a bizarre topic for Social Security, but something I want to, it's important enough because a lot of survivor benefits are, I don't know if messed up would be the right words, but could have been higher, I guess we could say it that way. The survivor benefit claiming, while it should be very straightforward, there's these pitfalls, these speed bumps, these issues that can come up. And this is one of them, the Windex. So bottom line, if the deceased spouse died before turning 62, the survivor should make sure that Windex was at least considered in the calculation of their benefit and make sure it applies and is being, they're getting credit for it if it's actually due. Okay. The second related topic to this, so this is related in that it's a situation that tends to underpay a widow or widower, or a, what we might call a survivor, is when, due to the rules of being able to claim your own benefit versus a survivor benefit, turns out that still a little known feature, if you will, or characteristics of Social Security, is that survivor benefits and retirement benefits are two kind of separate pools of benefits that can be claimed. And they're not as connected as, say, retirement benefits and spousal benefits. Those have, say, this, they have a connection in that the retirement benefit must be claimed first before the spousal is claimed. And if you turn off the retirement benefit, it turns off the spousal. That's the connection, that tight connection that I'm referring to. Survivor benefits are different. Survivor benefits are a separate pool that you can draw from without affecting your decision on drawing from the retirement benefit pool. Where people run into trouble is that Social Security isn't always good at explaining this to people and can lead them to leaving money on the table or making a decision that will permanently reduce their benefit compared to what they could have gotten later on. Couple of reminders. Your retirement benefit can get the increases that are granted due to delayed retirement credits. So delayed retirement credits, DRCs, are awarded to you when you wait to claim your retirement benefit past your full retirement age, all the way up till age 70. And those credits come in the form of an 8% increase in your benefit every year that you delay past your full retirement age up to age 70. Now, we talk about it yearly, but it's actually applied monthly. So you don't have to wait a full year to get the full year's worth. But that applies to retirement benefits. Survivor benefits, you cannot increase them by waiting past your full retirement age. You can decrease them. Remember I said survivor benefits you could claim as young as age 60 or as young as age 50 if you're disabled. But age 60, you would claim a reduced survivor benefit because you're below your full retirement age. But if you waited past your full retirement age, you don't get any sort of additional benefit like delayed retirement credits. This creates a circumstance where sometimes if you have both available to you, you have your own record from your own work, and you happen to be a survivor, a widower, there's a survivor benefit, on the table. There's your own retirement benefit on the table, but you need to claim them in the right order to maximize the amount that you can collect. And let me give you a prime example of what can happen if you don't consider this and claim things properly or optimally when you go in as a survivor. So here's a hypothetical. Let's take a hypothetical retired widow named Georgette, who just turned 62 and whose husband just passed away. So Georgette's husband, George, passed away, and Georgette is done working, just retired, age 62. Georgette's full retirement benefit from Social Security at 66 and 8 months, which is, if they just turned 62, I'm recording this in 2020, so that would mean that Georgette was born in 1958. Full retirement age in 1958 births is 66 and 8 months. Her own benefit, based on her own earnings record, would be $2,500 per month if she waited to 66 and 8 months. Her monthly widow's benefit, if she were to start taking it at full retirement age, would be $2,700 a month. And here's a little weirdness. For people born in 1958, your full retirement age for your own retirement benefit is 66 and 8 months, but your full retirement age for survivor benefits is 66 and 4 months. She happens to be part of this weird range of years, of birth years, where your full retirement age is actually different. This is another little known fact, or overlooked fact with a lot of people. They're a little different, but the survivor benefit is $2,700. So George had a little higher benefit than Georgette did, but they're still both, you know, close. Hers is $2,500. His was $2,700. Now, Georgette's best strategy would be to file for her widow's benefit only right now. And she wouldn't get the $2,700, though. Since she's claiming early at 62, she would only get about $2,174 per month. That's the reduction of the $2,700 down, and take that. Now, the important part is she takes just the survivor benefit, because what this is going to do, it's going to allow her benefit to grow until she turns 70. Now, her benefit, if she were to delay it past her full retirement age to 70, would eventually grow to $3,167. Remember what I mentioned before, the survivor benefit, though, can't grow past the $2,700. So the survivor benefit will never go up. It'll go down by her claiming it early, but it will never increase past the $2,700 figure. Her own benefit, though, even though it's only $2,500 at full retirement age, because it can get delayed retirement credits, it'll grow eventually to $3,167. In my book, that's bigger than $2,700, right? So if she claims the survivor benefit now, she'll get $2,174. When she turns 70, she switches over to $3,167. That would be the ideal approach for her. The downside is if she doesn't do it right. For instance, if she's told by Social Security that she must file for her retirement and widow's benefit at the same time, that's the common rule, essentially. You have to file for all benefits to which you are eligible or to which you are entitled. That's kind of a saying at Social Security. What they're really talking about there are spousal benefits and your own benefit, and maybe if you know any other random benefits that there might be, you go in, you have to file for them. What they want to do is make sure you're getting the biggest one possible. So they're trying to do you a favor, but in this particular case, survivor benefits are unique in that they do not have to be part of the equation. You can treat that decision separately. But if she's told she has to file for both, I'll let you know in a second what will happen there. She also might have, you know, read this. Maybe she's not told this, but a lot of the publications talk about it the same way, that you have to file for both. And even the form, the application you fill out, uses wording about having to file for all benefits simultaneously. They don't make it clear that you don't have to file for survivor benefits and retirement benefits simultaneously. Common mistake is a Social Security staffer makes the mistake entering it in the system. If she went in, instead of claiming it on her own online, she went in, they entered it wrong. Or oftentimes the staffer doesn't know this rule. Maybe they're new, aren't fully trained, etc. If any of those happened, she will get the 2174 widow's benefit for the rest of her life and never get the $1,000 a month increase at age 70. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. The question is, if she does it the optimal way, she starts out at 2174, but then gets an increase to 3167. I know it's not quite a thousand, but pretty darn close, right? Within $7. She'll get the increase. If she files for her own benefit and the retirement benefit, Social Security doesn't pay you both of them. They look at them and they say, which one is bigger? Even though you're entitled to both of these, we'll enter into the system that you want to start them both, but Social Security will only pay you the bigger amount. In this case, her own benefit, if she were to claim it at 62, would only be $1,793 a month. Well, clearly, $2,174 a month survivor benefit is bigger. So they would say, well, you're filing for both, your own benefit and the survivor benefit. We're only going to pay you the $2,174. But because she turned on her own benefit in the system, even though they're not paying it to her, that's the crazy thing. They're withholding it because the survivor benefit is larger. Because she officially turned it on, no delayed retirement credits are ever going to be awarded to her. That $1,793 will never grow to the $3,167 that it had the potential to grow to if it was left alone in the background. You can see the pain here that is being set up. You can see the financial harm that's being created by not understanding the rules and not filing for this optimally. Now, this all depends on age, what the benefits, what your own benefit is versus the survivor benefits, all of these things. So it's not always the case that you'd file it in this order. Sometimes the reverse order is the same. Other times, one benefit will always be the biggest. It will never, the other will never catch up to it. But this is something that does happen where at 62, benefit A, in this case, the retirement, the survivor benefit is bigger, but at 70, her own benefit will be bigger. Because they're separate pools, you can claim them and take advantage of that fact. Even more distressing, here's the nasty part. Let's say you make the mistake, or she made the mistake, or someone made it for her, of filing for both of them. And then she realizes the mistake. She cannot turn off her own benefit. You cannot suspend your benefit until you reach full retirement age. So she's going to go from 62 and then to kind of reduce the harm, she's saying, well, at least I can get the delayed retirement credits between 66 and 8 months and 70. So let me suspend my own benefit at that time, which I'm allowed to do. And it's true under suspension that you would get delayed retirement credits. But here's the nasty part. If you suspend your own benefit, you suspend all benefits. She can't just suspend her own benefit to reap the delayed retirement credits. It'll turn off the survivor benefit as well. So she'll go all those years with nothing trying to chase a few delayed retirement credits. Whereas if she had never turned it on in the first place, which is the best approach in this particular story, if she never turned it on in the first place, she'd reap all the rewards of the delayed retirements just as if she had never touched it until she turned 70, all the while collecting this 2174 survivor benefit while she waits. We call it being paid to wait. Oftentimes people are trying to do the math. Does it make sense to delay to 70 or not? And normally when you delay, you give up any benefit. That's the trade-off. I'm going to get nothing in order to get a bigger benefit at 70. In a case like this, because of the survivor benefit being available separately, you can collect it on its own. We call it being paid to wait instead of getting nothing to wait. It makes waiting a lot more attractive, right? In this case, 2174, there's no downside to her collecting the 2174. Clearly, 2174 is better than zero, so not claiming doesn't make any sense. Claiming her benefit is going to be less. That doesn't make any sense. Claim the survivor benefit first, wait for hers to reach 70, turn it on, get this $1,000 a month increase for the rest of her life. that is a potential for all kinds of people, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands, which it turns out, because of this bad advice or even just a friendly Social Security agent not pointing this out to people who are in this circumstance where they have the ability to claim a survivor or their own, they have both, allowing someone to claim both simultaneously when they're not going to get any benefit from the one. Some people call it fraudulent almost. It's fraudulent. I know that's a strong word. I wouldn't call it fraud. I think it's just not knowing the rules and not wanting to go out of your way to help the general population. When I say help, the help needs to come from Social Security. Even though Social Security has been notified or advised that this is happening, this is still slipping through the cracks for people. It's a training thing. Or they could build it into the software, or maybe after the fact, create some kind of fix for this. Let's say you do this and 3 years later, you're listening to a radio show or a podcast, or you're reading something and you realize, oh my gosh, I made a horrible mistake. Be able to go and say, you know, this, somebody should have told me this. I'm leaving all this money on the table. I definitely would have done it this other way. Can't you fix it? Well, most, you know, these days the answer is no, right? I think they should. I think they should. Something like this, especially, you know, these are people that have lost a spouse. They're already being harmed, right? I think there should be better safeguards in place, or at least a mechanism to fix it when something like this comes to light. So these are two areas you need to pay attention to. I think anyone, yourselves or maybe parents that you're helping with Social Security issues, if there's a survivor benefit in play, don't treat it casually. Make sure you investigate all of the options for claiming. Does it make sense to claim it immediately? Would it make more sense to claim it later? Is there another benefit we could claim in the meantime and leave that one alone? Or does it make sense to claim that survivor, leaving the retirement benefit unclaimed for a while? There's all sorts of strategies. A lot of the strategies between spouses when they're both living have gone away. They closed some of them. They called them loopholes. I don't think they were loopholes, but they changed the rules where a lot of the old spousal claiming strategies are going away. There's some people that were grandfathered into some of the more popular ones. If you were born before January 2nd of 1954, you're still available, or some of these strategies are still available to you. The old file and suspend idea, restricted application idea, the file and suspend is softened. You can still suspend, but you can't do the old way of filing and suspend where your spouse still gets to collect. So that's gone for everybody now. But the restricted application is still available for people born before January 2nd of 1954. But they've really tightened down on the spousal strategies. This is one still fully available. They didn't touch this one. They didn't say, oh, no, when you file for one, you're deemed to be filing for your survivor benefit. You can't do one or the other. You have to commit to both simultaneously. That has not happened between survivor benefits and retirement benefits. You need to be aware of this. So be very careful. This could be leaving hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table for you, your spouse you leave behind, one of your parents that ends up being a survivor. Treat this seriously. Look into this before you just go claiming things willy-nilly, because they aren't necessarily looking out for you at the Social Security office, and their systems don't always catch this, and they don't run after you down the street to say, oh, you don't want to do that. You want to do it this way. They're barred from giving you certain types of advice. I think they should be required to at least point it out to you, not in a trying to convince you way, but just saying, okay, if you did this, this is what you'd get. If you did that, that's what you'd get. Which would you prefer? I think they should be required to do that in these cases. But because hundreds of thousands of people have been identified not being given this opportunity, I think you can't rely on that. So you got to watch out for yourself. So thanks for sticking with me. This is kind of a couple of complicated situations with Social Security, but because they're both related to survivor benefits, I wanted to kind of clean these up because this has come up recently in a few things. The Windex thing was a couple months ago on a question. We constantly have questions about survivor benefit claiming. when there's also a retirement benefit in play as well. So I think those were tied together, and the unique or the thing they have in common is that doing it wrong, and I think there's clearly a right and wrong way on these, doing it wrong can cost a lot of money to the benefit recipient. Got to be careful with these. So thanks, everybody, for sticking with me. Probably not as exciting listen to one voice drone on and on, but I appreciate you listening. If you've got an idea for a new for another EDU show, let us know. Go to our website, jimhelps.com. We will get back. We were going to do a part two EDU on CRDs, right? Charitable distributions. Or, no, was it QCDs? I think we were doing QCDs, qualified charitable distributions. And Jim wanted me to remind you that we will get to that again after he's back on the show here in the next couple of weeks. And we haven't forgotten, so we will do part two of that show that we did, I think, right before the holidays here. So we'll get back to that. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea, we're open to suggestions for EDU shows. I think the next one we're going to do is going to be a tax-focused EDU show next week. That's I was talking to Bob about doing, he's got some more tax tidbits, if you will. But jimhelps.com, you can learn a little more about us and send in your own question if you'd like. Q&A show will be coming up new as well on Saturday, I think is usually when those get released. I've got a slew of questions I'll be going over later this week that you'll be able to listen to on Saturday. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.